This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. If you're a fan of MPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Hugh Akers,
Jane Bolton,
John Ward,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Now, Hugh, you're from a family that was one of the original settlers in this sort of area. Is that right?
Yes. Our family did purchase this land in the 1880s. And yes, one of the earlier settlers. And at the time, it was bought off local white people. It wasn't bought directly off the Maori, so it had been sort of semi-farmed beforehand.
Ah, okay.
Even though a lot of the bush was being felled at the time.
Okay, and because it was part of the Manchester block?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Yes. One of the largest single titles in the Manchester block, I've been told by the district council.
Oh, okay. Hmm. But so, and your family had or your was it your great grandfather came sometime shortly before that from England?
Yes, he originally moved to a farm called Riverdale, which was then sort of on swamp. It was all flax, and they were very much involved in the flax industry, setting up the mills and the strippers at Opiki.
I like the name.
In those days, it was called Riverdale.
I like the name. You say it was swamp, so they called it Riverdale, which is a nice way to make it sound much nicer.
Yes.
I've heard some other people when they arrived here and saw the land, and the who was it? They were saying the I think the teenage girls saw the farm, having known farms in England, and just burst into tears because it was nothing like the English farms. I don't know what the reaction of your family was when they
would have been. Fairly similar. They had obviously looked around the country to see what they liked, and including the Wairarapa and as well as the Manawatu, and finally settled on that country down at Opiki. At that time, was Riverdale was about 7,000 acres, of which they, William Akers started draining. Once the flax sort of disappeared, and before the flax industry was wiped out during the First War, they were running the flax mills at Opiki, and eventually the toll bridge there was converted from a trolley for carting the flax across the river on a tram across one side of the river to the other from the stripper to the mill, and then converted once the flax disappeared and converted into a bridge for vehicle traffic.
Oh, okay.
I remember the old toll bridge. Yeah.
Mm.
So is this quite separate from the flax industry in Foxton? Or?
Well, it was very similar.
But
there were a lot of mills and a large area. It was flax mills right along the river in those days.
Yeah, okay. Yes. So were you just processing the flax or making the products from them?
It was more than just the processing, and I think whether they made much product, I do not know did at the mill. Whether it was further processed, I don't know.
Okay, so your family sort of lived down there, but they also had the farm up here on
they originally lived in Palmerston, and they eventually moved down about 1924-26 and built a house there, and then eventually while they were at Opiki, they did buy Broadlands up here in the 1880s. And then the farm was, once William passed away, the two sons, Arthur and Hugh. Hugh ended up with Opiki, which was cut off from Tapuna, which Arthur had, the two brothers. And Arthur ended up by running this farm from Linton. So at that stage, they always had a farm manager.
Where
was Tapuna? Whereabouts was Tapuna?
Tapuna is at Linton. So that was the upper part of the river, because Riverdale was a property 25 miles along the Manawatu River bank, on the south side or true left bank, and an average width of only about a half a mile. So it was long and narrow. And so eventually the place was cut up for rehab farms, 50-acre dairy farms, during the First and Second War.
Was that, you donated it, or it was confiscated?
No, it was confiscated by the government.
Okay, were you compensated?
Yes, compensated for it.
Okay.
Yes. So the family ended up with 630 acres at Opiki and about 850 acres at Linton, and that was called Tapuna.
Yeah.
And so in the earlier days, the livestock from here, it was basically a breeding property in the a lot of the stock, cattle and lambs, were sent down to Tapuna to be finished.
Very progressive.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so that went on for a long time, up until the, before I took over, that had just about changed. So I came and moved onto the property in 1974. But I had been working here as a shepherd beforehand for a few years, so I got to know the place. But up until then, the managers had been mainly from the Romley family, a well-known family around the area, had been, and they bought land around as well.
Okay.
But so they had worked, one of the Romneys had worked for our family for probably over 100 years, I would say.
Oh, wow.
Nearly 100 years. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So growing up, did your family talk much about their feelings about farming here and so on?
The feelings?
Yeah, did they, this is a good life, or they had ambitions for other things, or...?
Yes, well, the thing is, most of the family had lived on the flatland at Opiki and Linton, and it was quite different. I was probably the first one of the family to move up into the hill country. I had the choice of staying at Opiki on 630 acres or coming up here it's about 4,000 acres. Here and farming that, and it was always more of a challenge. To work in the hill country, and I had worked in the high country in the South Island before anyway, so I wasn't green to it.
Okay, so what sort of work now as a shepherd? Did that mean you were on horseback most of the time, or walking?
Yeah, well, in the early days when I was here, shepherding, yes, it was all horseback. It's only probably the last 15-20 years, I suppose, since horses are gradually not in use anymore. Probably the last time I was doing a bit of cattle work, mustering. But getting off in the early days, of course, they even drafted the cattle on horseback. But until people sort of got the cattle quieter and got in amongst them, walked amongst them, got them quieter, it was always more beneficial. And and of course, with the motorbike thing now, it's changed completely. But a lot of that is due to to staff management, getting more done in a day. And
So what were you saying in the early days? You'd be in more contact with the animals and they'd be more used to you and calmer, and now it's a bit different?
No, I think the animal behaviour is much better. They're a lot quieter now that people get in amongst and walking amongst them, like in the cattle yards I'm talking about.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
With the early days, when you're on horseback, in those days we had Romneys that we had a lambing beat and went around them every day and tried to save as many lambs as possible, and that's what you used to do. But gradually we changed to Purindales, and it just makes it a lot easier. We don't go around them at lambing time anymore. They've got to look after themselves. It's better to keep away from them.
I'd heard that, yes, now there's a different approach. You don't get too involved in lambing, but that's because it's a different... It's the Purindale rather than the Romney that makes the difference, or just a different style of...
Well, the sheep are probably a little bit wilder, and if you go in amongst them, you disturb them.
Yeah.
If you did go around every day, they got used to you, but you weren't achieving much. Mm. You're better to keep out. And my philosophy has always been that, survival of the fittest without, overdoing it, and letting them look after themselves. And that's what they're bred to do. But it's that cheviot in the Purindale that gives them that, hybrid vigour that, they're a little bit scary. You've got to just be careful with them. So,
but they also take their lambs to cover, don't they? They look after their lambs well. The Romneys, you have to feed them and keep them going, look after them more.
Well, you have to watch them more, and they were harder to muster. You needed a lot more hunt-away dog power things like that. There's little issues that just Purindales just seem to make it that much easier. You know, less stags and that sort of thing.
They were cleaner.
And easier to muster,
Scavengers.
The old days when we were mustering Romneys from the back, it used to take all day, from 5 o'clock in the morning till, 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon to get them home, whereas Purindales, you've got them home in 2 hours sort of thing. So
they're in a hurry.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're just more mobile.
Yeah, they are.
Yes.
But sheep farming's changed a lot, hasn't it? It's not just the stock. You've had various ups and downs in terms of...
The massive changes, every year there's something new coming up. Some of it might be due to government regulations and things like that too. So there's a whole lot of issues happening, and there's more pressure on farmers to do the right thing. And so farmers have got to change, or otherwise they're penalised of some sort. Yeah. So
what sort of issues?
What sort of issues?
Could you?
Oh, it's just a lot of it's health and probably there's nothing wrong with safety issues, but it's more animal treatment, animal welfare. You can see, the way that they're clamping down on farmers that are bogging up paddocks and, cattle standing around in mud and things like that. And that's ongoing. And having to fence off waterways, is bringing on a lot more cost to the farmer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And staff, it's never ending, obviously.
Staff safety as well. That was another thing, wasn't it? Staff safety.
Staff safety is very important. Now you've got to be careful what you do or what you have asked your staff member to do. And that's all fair enough. Yeah. What does put pressure on is the owner does all the risk.
Yeah.
What's happened. Instead of, you can't let a young fella go and do a job unless you he's done right.
You do it yourself.
By the time you've sort of taught the young fella how to do it, and even so, you're still responsible.
This
all comes straight back onto the owner.
Does this limit the amount of initiative that workers can show them?
I don't think so. I think providing you've got the right staff, it's not an issue.
Yeah.
But if you've got Yeah, you've got someone that's, you know, accident prone. Yeah. You know, you've got a problem.
Yeah. So were there many accidents in the past?
There's not many, no. We've been reasonably lucky.
Yeah. And what sort of things might go wrong?
You just don't know.
Thinking back to, you know, 30 years or so, what sort of things might happen?
I don't know. We really haven't. We've had one person die on a tractor accident.
Mm.
He was thinking about other issues. He had just bought a farm and he was just about to buy the farm, and he wasn't concentrating on what he was doing.
Mm.
That's the only one we've lost. But you know, other than that, hasn't been too bad. Like, chainsaws are dangerous. Tree felling. We really haven't had too many accidents other than the one tractor death.
It is motorbikes rolling and tractors rolling. That was the big one, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Luckily, okay. We've had we've lost a motorbike, but the bloke was mustering sheep and standing somewhere. He hadn't put the handbrake on, so it went over a bluff. that sort of thing. But luckily, we haven't had anyone hurt or crushed by a motorbike. Mm. Yeah. So, you know, injured by a motorbike. So, we've had a vehicle go backwards and roll because a brake line had broken, sort of over a bank and had a roll, but he wasn't hurt.
Yeah.
Little things like that. But I think we've been a bit lucky.
Okay. And then you were talking about stock welfare as well. So.
Yes. Well, it's just what they're doing. Tail length on lambs when you're docking. That's been extended. And
dehorning your cattle?
The dehorning. Mm. Yes. Yeah, those issues, when they're young enough and the restrictions now on what age you can let them be before you have to stop cutting tails off or dehorning and things like that. So, you know, more regulations forcing vets to do this sort of thing than the farmer themselves. Sort of a bit more PC stuff, really, and the farmers, they don't like hurting animals. And so they, when they're young at lambing, now we're, you know, some talk that we might be able to cut the tails off at all. Hopefully that doesn't come in. So but at why, the moment, we're allowed to extend it. We've got to extend it.
Yeah. For a novice, why is that important? Why would you cut the tails
off?
Well,
it's all to do with, dags on the tails and that sort of thing.
And cleanliness as well. They're cleaner without their tails on.
Yes.
For fly when they get fly blown.
Yes.
If they have a lot
they're more prone to fly-blown lambs if the tails are left on and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So just hopefully that doesn't come in. But thing is, the way things are, there's always someone looking to put a new regulation in front of us. So.
But you mentioned as well, now there's more done by vets rather than farmers, but I thought there was a problem with just availability of vets and what they want to do.
It's more the regulation stuff, for animal welfare. At the moment, what the vets do, it's not really a problem, but they are forced into, getting vets more involved. And so, it's probably a shortage of vets, and particularly with, we've had a lot of English and some South African vets come into the country that have helped the job, but, with the restrictions on people coming into the country.
With the COVID, that makes a problem. And also a lot of the younger, the vet students are predominantly female now. So are you seeing many women vets working in the farm area?
Yes, and more and more now.
Which is
good. I mean, we're pretty well set up here. seem to be well served. So, you know, we haven't got a problem yet just in this area, but I can imagine some remote areas could be, you know, bit harder to find vets.
Yeah, you benefit from being close to Massey University?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes, over the years we have been involved in doing some research for them.
Hmm.
We got to know quite a few of the scientists that have been experimenting with animals here. So,
What sort of experiments have they done?
A lot of it has been with animal behaviour, how to work, what to use to move cattle through cattle yards. Some experimenting with sheep, but they haven't for quite a long time now. A lot of it's fairly, it's quite a few years ago. They seem to, Massey seems to do more of that because they've got sufficient farms of their own now to do that sort of thing.
So, Hugh, when you first came here, how much was in native bush? How much did you have to clear any of the hills?
When I came, no, all the clearing had been done. Other than a bit of scrub that we had cleared, but I probably planted and preserved more bush than when I came. I planted a lot, and I mean I've been planting about 1,000 native trees each year in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Is that along the streams and so, riparian planting?
Just different areas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, the swamp. They've got a special swamp down here, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been, we've been told that it's the best area of swamp miry anywhere in the country. And Horizons.
Swamp miry.
Swamp miry?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a wet. Wet feet tree. It's a bit white pine kahikatea.
Okay. Yeah.
They live closely in the same area with wet feet all year round.
Yeah.
And they've got special roots that sort of ventilate to to grow properly.
Yeah.
And they've found it the best sample, and they've actually found some other rare plants there, very rare, that they don't know much about as yet. But
should have said wetland. It's really known as wetland, isn't it?
More than
swampland.
It's a wetland.
Yeah.
Yes, and we've controlled the water level on it for a long time.
Yeah.
Kept it. We started draining it a bit, and then we decided it was easier to leave it wet, and then we didn't have to fence it off. It was that wet, and the stock won't go in it.
So it is
very dense, and some of the trees there are the kahikatea, over 400 years old. And we have had groups get lost in there. We had a Huntley School group went in there, and took them about 5 hours before they eventually found their way out. They'd only walked in at 200 metres.
So you got much wildlife there as well?
There's a bit of wildlife, yes.
And the birds? Bad ones.
Good bird life.
Anything in particular? You haven't any bitterns, have you?
Bitterns? I'm not sure. I don't think so.
So as a hill country farm where the hillsides have been cleared for pasture, do you get a lot of erosion?
Not a great deal. We've left the worst, that we let the manuka grow and control on the shaded faces and the steeper stuff. We've let the manuka stay there, and of course other natives growing up, broadleaf is growing up in amongst it now, which is quite good.
So any gorse and any broom,
We had patches of gorse and a patch of broom. The worst of the broom comes off the saddle road. And that's where the broom, any broom that comes off the edge of the road. In the early days, of course, they used to bring stock over the saddle road, and each year, each winter, they used to bring several mobs from Hawke's Bay, and they would bring in a new weed each year and drop off on the side of the road, and obviously we had a new weed.
Yeah.
But thank goodness that's all over.
Okay.
Just very, very briefly, because we're almost at time, but has farming become a lot more technical then?
Oh, very much so, yes. Now, when a wool shed had the basic, you know, just a shearing plant and everything else was done by hand. Now we've got sheep handlers, air compressed, you know, sheep handlers, conveyor belts, and dips, you know, automatic dips and, you know, electric, well, air, compressed air drafting systems, and also for digging or crutching sheep, handlers that compress the air, and so you're still standing up and not, you know, not having to chase sheep around.
Yeah,
a lot of and a lot of there's new stuff coming through all the time, but so everything's had to be labour saving as much as possible, and easier on a person's back.
And the staff need more qualifications. You don't just go into farming. Do they need a degree now? Or there's a lot more of that for some areas.
For what, going and studying? I think my son Willie's now running the place, and he goes to as much of that to get updated information from field days and, you know, such like things. Yeah. So it's over to him. It's a bit pointless me worrying about it anymore.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.